Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 170, recorded Wednesday, December 16th, 2020. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: proof to fly and hereditary travel. So coming to you again from the Travel Commons studios in Chicago, Illinois, and again, no travel since the last episode. Not too surprising given the way things are going right now. Now, back in April, I jumped on one of those just smoking American Airlines promotions and booked flights to London for Thanksgiving, which then sort of not surprisingly got canceled at the beginning of September. So I was back to what has been my typical Thanksgiving travel pattern for the past 10 to 15 years, staying at home to avoid crowds on what is always the busiest travel week of the year. Sort of PK, pre-kids, Irene and I would always travel over the holidays, splitting Thanksgiving and Christmas between our families in Southern California and Chicago. But post-kids, which is also PK, so I guess maybe it should be AK, after kids. Or maybe that's what I'm in right now is after. Anyhow, so after the kids showed up, we started staying at home, and I'd figure out how to ground myself from business travel that same week also. I found that the challenge of holiday travel wasn't necessarily the crowds, though. It's the makeup of the crowds, what some road warriors might call clueless travelers. I think amateur is certainly a more charitable and probably a more accurate term, even more so this year, with so many road warriors actually out of practice after being off the road since March. Lots of those folks definitely in danger of losing their professional traveler status. I saw an interesting graph the other day comparing last year's and this year's day-by-day airport travel volumes over the Thanksgiving weekends. No surprise, comparing the Wednesday travel volumes, which is traditionally the busiest travel day of the year, last year's Wednesday saw 2.6 million passengers, almost 2.5 times busier than this year. I'd expected that, but what really caught my eye was that this year's peak day, which actually was Sunday at about 1.2 million travelers, was still a lot less than last year's slowest day, that being Thanksgiving, which was 1.6 million travelers. Now, I didn't travel last year at Thanksgiving, but did in 2018. Irene and I broke our no travel rule and flew down to Santa Fe, New Mexico on Thanksgiving Day. Back in episode number 147, I said that Thanksgiving Day flight was one of the least stressful travel experiences I'd ever had. No traffic on the drive to O'Hare, no lines, the TSA agents were just hanging around, you know, looking for people to screen with smiles on their faces. In that day, there were around 25% more people in airports than on this year's busiest day, that being the Sunday after Thanksgiving. I shouldn't be surprised, but all the pictures I saw in the news coverage made it look like airports were a lot more crowded. Now, our apartment is just south of one of the northern approaches to O'Hare. Flights from the east come in over the lake. So if you're sitting sort of in seats A, B, and C, you get a great view of the city skyline, while seats D, E, and F get to look down over Wrigley Field. Then you end up going over the northwest side of the city, landing on one of the runways north of the terminal. I've always been impressed by the choreography of O'Hare. On a clear Friday afternoon, driving up the tollway that runs east of the airport, I'd see planes on parallel approaches landing simultaneously, one to the north of the terminal, one to the south of the terminal. And then looking up, you could see the lights of the planes on the approach behind them, behind the landing planes. 2, 3, 4, it just kept going on. Back in April, during Chicago's lockdown, I'd sit out on our rooftop deck because what else was I going to do? And maybe I'd see one plane coming in over the lake on that approach. But Now I'm seeing more planes, sometimes three, four in a row. Now, don't know that they're all carrying passengers. I mean, some might be temporary cargo carriers taking some of that e-commerce money with boxes instead of seats under the overhead bins. But I can kind of feel travel starting to pick up. Now, it's probably going to be a tough winter, but I'm trying to look out over the horizon a bit and trying to look forward to spring. So following up, Travel Commons contributor Alan Marco commented on my little lockdown game with my Google Mini, changing the voice to say an English accent and then asking about the weather in London. Alan wrote, "I often change the Siri voice for a bit of variety. Currently, I have Australian female providing my CarPlay directions. You can also ask Siri to play Travel Commons." Well, that note from Alan immediately got me digging into Siri's settings, looking for the voice options. I found I had a choice of American, Australian, British, Indian, Irish, and South African. Now, since I'd already used the first three with my Google Mini, it was between the last three. I chose Irish and ran that for, I don't know, probably a month, but have now switched over to South African. Actually, Waze, the navigation app, always impressed me with the number of voice and language options that it has. Every once in a while, I'd switch Irene's ways over to Hungarian before she'd head out somewhere. For some reason, I think I got more of a laugh out of that than she did. Travel Commons listener Dan Graben and I have been trading notes as we've each slogged through Thoreau's Walden. We both started it back in April, the height of the lockdown. Everybody was deciding that, you know, with nothing much else to do, it was a good time to pick up that classic book that you've always been meaning to get to. Dan started out with The Brothers Karamazov, which I thought was pretty damned impressive. I had first reached for Whitman's Leaves of Grass, but then, I don't know, I thought I needed something a little bit more down to earth, something that wouldn't need quite that level of interpretation and abstract thinking. And Walden, about Thoreau's self-isolation in the woods outside of Concord, Massachusetts, it seemed to be a better fit with the lockdown. Dan finished Thoreau last month at the beginning of November. I was about 50 pages behind, so I didn't finish till Thanksgiving, which I have to tell you was tough, you know, finishing that slog, cutting through the tryptophan fog, but I gutted through it. Dan said that he was staying with Thoreau moving on to Civil Disobedience before shelving the book. I pivoted to nonfiction, the book Why We Sleep, where a neuroscientist and sleep expert spends, I don't know, it seemed like about 300 pages saying, if you don't sleep 8 hours, you're killing yourself, which got me doing some mental math. You know, between jet lag from all the international flights I've done in my career, as well as that long stint of waking up at 4 a.m. to make 6 a.m. flights out of LaGuardia, rough math, I've probably dropped 5 years off of my life. Though, you know, given that I've got some dementia running through my family history, I might not have remembered those years anyhow. And one more thing, I show up on the other side of the mic talking travel pro tips with Matt Wilson on his Millennial Travel podcast. I'm trying to remember when we recorded this. Had to be pre-April 2019 because I was still in the suburban Travel Commons studios and Matt was hanging down in Costa Rica. Matt definitely got the better end of that stick. The connection fuzzes out every now and again, but it was a fun conversation. I'll put a link in the show notes. But fair warning, it's mostly me rattling on for an hour. I mean, listening back to it, I'm kind of embarrassed that I didn't give Matt much of a chance to get a word in edgewise. In the last episode, I talked about the work-from-home offerings from Marriott, Hilton, and Hyatt. They all had their own twists, but Hyatt's was the most unique in that their work-from-Hyatt offer was resort-focused and had a seven-night minimum. I said last month that it wasn't so much of a WeWork replacement as it seemed to be, kind of a digital nomads trial. Well, I'm guessing that they didn't get, you know, as much uptake on it as they wanted, because I just got an email from Hyatt the other day with a new offering, Office for a Day, and it pretty much matches Marriott's Day Pass. Like I said last month, these offerings all feel a bit toe in the water, a bit opportunistic, and now that we're starting to get better visibility into a post-vaccine timeline and a, you know, office reopening timeline, I wonder how long these offers are going to last. Will people still want to pay to work in a hotel room after all the Starbucks stores have reopened? I've talked in the past episodes about how I'm a bit of a knuckle dragger regarding printed travel guides. I still find a physical book useful when traveling, but I've been wondering how quickly these physical guides will be able to push out post-COVID editions to reflect the closures of bars, restaurants, and the independent shops that they've recommended over the past years. I was running through my own Chicago recommendation list from 2019. A bunch of my favorite places have closed. It's about an even split between closed forever, bye-bye, and closed until spring, we hope. The final proofs of the 2021 editions have to already be baked, if not already at the printers. I don't know. Maybe they'll all post errata pages that you can download, print off, and then stick in your books. Who knows? It'll be interesting to see what they do. Now, in a massive intersection of all things social media, I posted a CNN article on the Travel Commons Facebook page that a friend, a hotel company CIO, sent me on LinkedIn that showed TikTok videos of people cooking meals in hotel rooms using an iron for a griddle, a hot water kettle for a steamer, a pant presser as an oven, and the one that really wowed me, a coffee maker as a sous vide water bath. Now, I don't know if I should be impressed by the ingenuity or looking to set up, you know, some sort of ghost kitchen delivery service wherever these guys are, because I've never seen anyone go to that extent to cook their own meal in a hotel room. I mean, even guys I knew trying to squeeze the last pennies out of the per diems wouldn't do much more than, say, boil water for their cup of noodles or, you know, work hard not to burn their microwave popcorn. I'll also put a link in the show notes to the TikTok account of one of these guys, Jago Randalls. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. He's actually from Cornwall. His TikTok series, Isolation Kitchen, has about 150,000 followers. He does some impressive stuff. But, you know, I will make sure going forward that I rinse out the coffee maker and wipe down the iron before using them. So for many of us frequent travelers, a key milestone of the pandemic was when airlines and hotels gave us a year's push on our status, moving the expiration date of our, you know, precious metal status from January 2021 to January 2022. Big sigh of relief around the globe, all frequent travelers. Then for Southwest flyers, there was another milestone. Drink coupon expiration dates all got pushed to the end of this year. Whew. Well, I mean, that was a big thing, too. So by June, all's right in the traveling world. But a couple of days ago, I was rummaging around in my messenger bag and out tumbled five Southwest drink coupons, one with a September expiration date, the rest December 31st, coming up. Look, Southwest, I don't want to seem greedy. I mean, I did get a year's push on A-List and 6 months on Companion Pass, but I'd love you just that much more if you gave me another 6 months on those drink coupons. Nope, don't say anything right now. Just think about it. Just think about it. Let me know later. And hey, if you have any travel stories, questions, comments, tips, rants, the voice of the traveler, send them along to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. You can send a Twitter message to M. Peacock, post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page or our Instagram account at Travel Commons, or you can post comments on the website like Alan Marco did at travelcommons.com. The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is proof to fly. So last month, I think anybody who was paying any attention to travel saw the quote from the Qantas CEO, Qantas, the Australian, big Australian airline. He said, "We will ask people to have a vaccination before they can get on the aircraft." And I thought, well, okay. I mean, there was a lot of controversy about it, but I thought, you know, it's kind of the next logical step from what Delta's doing on their Atlanta to Rome flight and what United's doing on their Newark to Heathrow flights, where you have to take COVID tests and get a negative COVID test before you can get on the plane. So I guess, you know, a lot of noise about what the Qantas CEO said, but it just seemed like the next logical step. I remember going to a travel clinic before my first flight to India, getting shot up with MMR, DTP, hepatitis, and typhoid vaccines, and then being given my yellow card. Now, officially, it's my International Certificate of Vaccination or Prophylaxis, listing all my shots. The travel doctor told me to carry that with me to India, which I did, and then I carried it with me to Vietnam and Thailand and Singapore and China. No one ever asked to see it, though, not in an airport, an immigration line, a hotel. Now, it looks like for the COVID-19 vaccine, the plans are that we'll get a vaccination card, another card from the CDC after receiving the first dose of the vaccine. But really, I guess that card isn't necessarily meant to be a validated proof of vaccination. It's more of a reminder to go back in a couple of weeks for the second shot. And that handwritten piece of paper probably also won't pass muster at the Qantas boarding gate. And so that's why we're starting to see a bit of a vaccine passport app land grab going on. United has been testing the Common Pass app on their Newark to Heathrow flight. You get your COVID test at the United Club near gate C93 in Newark, and the results are then uploaded into the app, which then will display a QR code to the gate agent. Common Pass is being spun up with support from the World Economic Forum, the Davos guys. Cathay Pacific, Lufthansa, Swiss Air, and JetBlue also have plans to use it. Now, Delta and Alitalia are trying the AOK Pass that's been developed by the International Chamber of Commerce on their Atlanta to Rome flight, that COVID-free flight. Now, it uses blockchain for medical certificate storage, so bonus points to them in technology buzzword bingo. The IATA, the International Air Transport Association, which is an airline trade group, they say they're finishing up their app, Travel Pass, and will be piloting it with IAG, which is the parent company of British Airways, Iberia, and Aer Lingus. They're going to be piloting that sometime early 2021. They haven't locked down a date yet. And then the World Health Organization, WHO, says they're looking at Estonia's e-vaccination certificates as maybe the basis of some sort of a smart yellow card app. Now, I'm sure I'm missing a whole lot more. I just got tired of reading the same rehashed press release verbiage about secure and verifiable storage of health certifications. I mean, going through this, it starts to feel like the health equivalent of those scooter apps where I need like half a dozen of them on my phone so I can make sure I can rent the closest scooter to me. Now, unless somebody blinks, it seems like I'll need, three or four of these vaccine passports to cover all my travel bases. But after reading through all the press releases and the infographics and the FAQs, none of these apps were real clear on how I get my physical CDC vaccine card into that secure and verifiable digital storage vault, let alone the blockchain. And I'm guessing that doctors and clinics and pharmacies are going to be more focused on taking care of patients and keeping those vaccines cold. And they're not going to be all that interested in entering my vaccination into three or four different screens. Now, I don't know, maybe Australia, where Qantas is based, is further ahead with electronic health records. But I'm thinking, at least for the next year or so, that my CDC card is going to be the best that Qantas and the gang are going to get. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is hereditary travelers. Now, I was reading some research, as one does during a lockdown advisory when one gets caught up running down a click hole. The research was about jobs running in families. Don't ask me how I got started there. I can't even remember. But some of the stats were kind of interesting. A son with a military father is 5 times more likely to enlist himself, while if his mother is a lawyer, he's 6.6 times more likely to follow her to the bar. And a daughter with a scientist father is almost 4 times more likely to be a scientist. Indeed, for me, when I was deciding my college major, I was leaning toward chemistry. Actually, I really like chemistry, but I ended up choosing chemical engineering, which I later found out to be kind of like mathematical plumbing, but more than it was chemistry. But I ended up choosing chemical engineering mostly because my grandfather and father are both engineers, which got me thinking, does traveling, careers that require frequent traveling, run in families? Again, looking back on my family, my grandfather traveled a lot when he worked for Sears, checking out vendors for hard goods, you know, tools, small machinery, you know, diehard craftsmen sort of stuff, if you're old enough to remember when Sears was actually good. And then, you know, and then working with those vendors on new products. My dad designed farm machinery, things like hay balers and cotton pickers for International Harvester. He'd often be on the road for weeks at a time, testing prototypes at farms around the country, you know, looking for different crop and field conditions. And then he'd be down in the plants helping them set up the manufacturing lines for that final product. And so I grew up seeing and living that rhythm of travel, dad at home, dad packing, saying goodbye, then getting on with our lives until he came back. And this was back in the late 60s and into the 70s, so no cheap long distance, let alone messaging or email or video calls. He was gone, and with the exception of a postcard or two, he was gone till he came back. And then when I joined the workforce, the first day of my first real job out of school, I got on a plane and made the first of what's been, I don't know, hundreds of flights between O'Hare and DFW. So many that pretty quickly I got to know the women working the front desk at the DFW Admirals Club. One morning, one of them asked me if maybe I'd like to meet her daughter, which was a little awkward. So I stopped for a minute and then I asked her, I said, really, would you want your daughter dating someone who's out of town as much as I am? Woman thought for a moment and looked at me and said, yeah, no, not really. Also around this time, my dad had gotten promoted past the level of going out to the field and so was traveling a lot less. But my mother took a purchasing executive role, and with that, she then had the need to go for a lot of travel out to vendors, to check quality, to approve new vendors. So while travel was generational or maybe hereditary from my father to me, my mother started being road warriors at the same time. So we were more like, I don't know, travel siblings, comparing hotel notes, competing on frequent flyer status and perks. So will traveling for a living in my family continue to the fourth generation? You know, it's tough to tell right now. I mean, both my kids measure their commute in feet rather than miles during the lockdown. And friends running consulting operations tell me that the current state is great for staff productivity. An hour sales call takes an hour rather than a day's worth of travel for that hour. And also working remotely with clients saves the client money and consultants don't get burnt out trying to balance, you know, work and home needs. And I've said back in the March and then again in the July episodes, I don't buy that 100% remote is the new normal, but I also don't believe that it'll snap back to 2019 levels, not after what will have been a year's plus time working out the mechanics of virtual working. But will there be another generation of road warriors in my family? I don't know. It'll probably take a couple of years to figure that out. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 170. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed, or better yet, tell a friend about it and get them to subscribe. Hey, from kind of the infrastructure comments, I made another little tweak to the RSS feed. That's the file that all the podcast apps use to pull new episodes for your subscribed podcasts. Now, this tweak affects the episode description in most of the podcast apps, the top ones at least. Now, for apps that support it, there are now clickable links in the episode notes or descriptions, whatever your app calls it. In the last episode, there were clickable links to the Gift Ideas blog post on the Travel Commons website, as well as the episode show notes page. Going forward, and certainly in the episode notes for this show, there will be a link to the show notes page. So you can just click on it. It'll take you directly to all the show notes, and then you can look at it, you know, if you want to check out some of the links that I've mentioned in this show. I've tested that this works on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, which is what I use, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, Podcast Addict, and Google Podcasts. All of those apps make up 70 to 80% of the Travel Commons downloads, depending on which service is doing the counting. So anyhow, if you get a chance, flip over to the episode description right now and check it out. And as always, you can find us on iTunes or Apple Podcasts now, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Amazon Music, as well as the other podcast apps that I just ran through. You can also ask Alexa, Siri, or Google to play Travel Commons on your smart speakers. The links, along with the RSS feeds, are on the right-hand side of the Travel Commons website under the heading Subscribe. Right below that, in the social media section, are the links to the Travel Commons Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram feeds. And hey, if you're already subscribed, how about leaving us a review on one of those sites? It helps people find the podcast and kind of join our happy band of travelers. And as always, if you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or audio file to comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, and Peacock on Twitter, the Travel Commons Facebook page, or the Travel Commons Instagram site, or post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken time to send in emails, tweets, post comments. Alan, thank you very much on the website. I really appreciate it. And until we talk again, hope you guys have a great Christmas, a great holiday, a great new year. Looking forward to talking to you again in January. Until then, stay safe. Thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.